This is Limit Up, the place where we explore markets, strategies, and trading psychology to take your trading to the next level.
Hey, everybody. This is Mark Meadows from Top Step. Thanks so much for joining us today. Boy, do we have an awesome interview scheduled. This is our conversation with Tony Saliba. Tony may be best known for his chapter in one of Jack Swagger's Market Wizards books, where he talks about how he went on a 70-month run where he had six figures in profits or more each month. You do the math on that, but that is a lot of profits and a lot of money that he made when he became a successful trader. But it wasn't always that way for him. And he gets into some of the stories, how he first blew up an account, how he learned to trade, and how he finally became that consistent and that successful. I hope you will tune in and listen to it. But before that, we had a huge move in gold this week. Traders were passing it around like a hot potato, and you didn't want to get stuck when the closing bell rang on Thursday. From a recent high of 1350, the price has come down to below 1280. More concerning, though, for gold bugs is the price has put in two consecutive lower highs, suggesting that it has more room to fall. What's that mean? I'm not sure about the gold chart, but it does make me more bullish the US dollar, which I keep harping on as my favorite trade of the past year. We have some hurdles left to overcome, but the level in the sand on spot euro dollar is around 111.80. That corresponds to 112.35 on the June futures contract. Keep an eye there, and it may open opportunities up for you to place your next trades. So with that, and without any further ado, let's toss it over to Eddie for this rewind episode with trader Tony Saliba.
It's a great honor to have a conversation with my guest, Tony Saliba. Anyone who has heard of Tony needs to know one phenomenal stat, just this one. He had a 70-month consecutive winning streak where he made at least six figures in profit a month. All right, figure that one out. Write it down. Six figures a month times 70. All right, big. But it wasn't always so easy for him. Now, one thing, we'll get into this, how he was able to get to the point of his career where he had those types of gains. But right now, just want to get Tony in here. Tony has also trained hundreds of option traders around the world in all types of different markets with large presence now in China. Now, Tony is a CEO and founder of Matrix Holding Group, leads a broker-dealer and trading technology group. He's also the author of Managing Expectations, a book on option trading. And Tony, honestly, it is awesome to have you here today.
Thanks, Eddie. My pleasure.
All right, Tony, beginning from all the way from being a caddy, finding your way to an open door on the trading floor, getting that job, making a presence on the floor and getting your name around. And this way it sort of opened up a lot more doors for you. Tell us about your beginnings.
I did caddy from 12 years old to 21 years old in the summers, with a couple summers where I worked road construction in there in those 10 years. But I went to school on an Evans scholarship. I'm currently a director of WGA, so the caddy program is in my blood, and I caddied for a lot of Board of Trade members that I really didn't understand what they did at the time, and I went to school to be a broadcaster, actually, and halfway through my freshman year, my counselor, a job counselor, college counselor, said, you know, you think you're going to replace Harry Carey, who at the time was the White Sox, voice of the White Sox. They said, that's a one in a million long shot. You're crazy. And you're never going to make any money in journalism. Journalists at the time were making about $5,000 a year. And I said, all right, well, what field is the right field to be in? And they said, business. So I said, okay, well, who makes the most money in business? They said, accountant. So I went into accounting, Ed, and I hated it. I slogged through, and my senior year, I was graduating in literally 3 weeks. I'm with some alumni at Indiana. I'm in the water monitoring paddle boats for a race that they have every year down in the freezing lake. And one of the judges, alumni in the boat, says, Saliba, what are you going to do when you graduate? And I said, I don't know. I don't really want to be an accountant. And they said, do you ever think about being a broker? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I get it for these guys, these bean brokers and mm-hmm. bond brokers. I guess at the time there were just beans and bellies and other grains. And he said, why don't you come to work for us in Indianapolis? And I'm thinking, what exchange is in Indianapolis?
Right.
What, you know, what's there? And I'm here, I'm thinking, Eddie, that I'm going to be on the phone going, hello, New York, buy, Chicago, sell, you know. And I was an account executive in the midst of the Jimmy Carter malaise, if you recall.
I recall.
Yeah. So I gutted that out for about a year, bopping around the state of Indiana at the ripe old age of 22, trying to sell economic development bonds to farmers. And they're like, well, what do you know about investing? You're right out of college. So the chicken and egg thing, never sold a bond. And back then, you're probably too young to remember yourself, but a really busy day in the stock market, a really exciting banner day would break 10 million shares. Okay. I remember the day that Carter made an announcement, gold shot up tremendously, and we did 11 million shares. And it just, there wasn't any business, wasn't any, turnover. So I said, who makes all the money in this industry? And they said, the guys on the floor. And I said, see you later. I'm right. going back to Chicago. And, you know, I was in the seat there for 9 months before some of your listeners may have read about this. But in April of 78, the stock market crashed up. Literally in April of 78, they could not open stocks because of the buy demand was off the chart, coupled with an options expiration where back then people were paying something the day before expiration for far out of the money calls. And there was a massive short squeeze. So that's when I started on the floor in 78. And it was just because I kept asking, well, you know, what's better than this? What's better than this? And when I got down to the CBOE in 78, and I was 5 years late to the game, from the standpoint of initial launch, but it was still a primordial ooze, if you will.
Right.
And there was a lot of rules that had to be changed and a lot of conventions that were being set up. And there was a lot about trading options that a lot of people didn't know. So I was really fortunate in my timing.
You know that the market is forever evolving. I mean, even as we speak, it's changing. Tomorrow it's going to be completely different. As these situations came up, some of the times they really didn't have a fix, or they weren't anticipating what might happen. And that's exactly what you're talking about. Now, your story, famous story of one of your first trading account. Here's the setup. All right, gaining 50% quickly, then losing 80%. And everybody listening here that has traded is probably like, well, yeah, I did the same thing. But you realize with the help of a mentor that you were taking too much risk. You switch to another pit and you switch to a different product. Can we sort of go back to that? Give us a story on that. we tell traders a lot to take it slow, take it small, basically slow is fast, fast is slow. It sounds like what your partner was telling you, and how did that sink in at the time?
Well, what's really fortunate for me, Eddie, is that that I had a lot of people around me that I could ask questions of and get some legitimate answers. I clerked for better part of 6-7 months for a guy who was successful at the time, and I thought I knew everything, you know, and I couldn't wait till I was backed by a guy I caddied for. He was, you know, God rest his soul, he passed away a few years ago at ripe age of 93. And I caddied for him for many years. I was never that close to him because he was just a very private guy, but he was in the game that my steady loop played all the time. And he was a wonderful man, Julian Good. And Julian saw me on the floor and saw that I was a clerk. And he said, he was a tall man, 6'6", 6'7", very reserved, deep voice, almost a dark soul. "Tony, you know what you're doing down here?" And I said, yeah, I do, Julian. And he said, maybe you can show me. So I put on a spread in Teledyne, one of the stocks that the guy I was clerking for traded in, and made Julian money within 5 days, a lot of money, you know, percentage wise. He was shocked. He said, I said, you should take it off now. We took it off. And he said, "Can you do that again?" And I did it. I said, yeah. You know,
presto.
I'll find something. Yeah. And I'll, you know, it was like a ratio vertical spread or something. And then I did it 2 times in a row. And he goes, can you repeat that? Can you do that over and over? And I said, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure I can. So we started a partnership and I jumped in head first. And as you can imagine, I went in, you know, palms in, buying everything I could, bought a lot of premium. There was a continued premium expansion for a couple weeks. He started with $50,000. Trading account went up, you know, pretty well, reasonably well. And I didn't get out of anything. And then boom, they pulled the rug out. And what was about a $70,000 or $75,000 account at the time, which, you know, was up like 50% on the account, 40%, dropped to $15,000 in like 6 or 7 days. And he was mortified. And he said, you know, you run out of this money and that's it. It was less than 6 weeks in. And I didn't know what to do. I blew out of the positions in Teledyne. Most of them, almost all of them, got him in a safe position and started to do some soul searching. And at the time, the CBOE had a members lounge upstairs where most of the older guys would go up there, and you could smoke on the floor, could smoke up there at the time, not on the floor, but in the members lounge.
Right.
And, you know, there was my partner always in the same corner with his, you know, buddies that he played gin rummy with, and smoking a little black Tipperillo cigar. And he said, "Why don't you talk to these guys over here?" Okay. And they were also older, you know, I'm 23 and at the time, and these guys are, you know, in their early 50s, late 40s or whatever. They were trading in Boeing, and Boeing was trading around $30 a share, and literally would have a large movement day would be a half a point. Okay. And most days we traded back in fractions, as you know, back then. And most days would trade an eighth, a quarter, and the options didn't move very much. So I talked to these guys and said, you know, how do you make a living in there? Well, long story short, they basically helped me understand some tenants that I still use today that were connected to my accounting roots to do a pro forma. How much do you want to make each month? What, you know, what can you survive on, or what is your minimum that you'll accept? Break it down, go for that every day, maybe a little bit more, and figure out a strategy that is well within your capital and work around that strategy and make that strategy work rather than be a gunslinger and try to blow it out every day, right? And what I did was, and it's, you know, I've talked about it before and it's been written about, is just a very regimented, disciplined process of making my markets, holding my markets, and only trading on my markets and not stepping up or selling down, and working simple spreads, whether they be verticals or calendars or diagonals or some other relationship that you let the paper put you into the trade and take you out of the trade. Okay, well, those things aren't really that doable today for people who are trading today, because A, they're not making markets. B, the markets are a lot tighter. C, the flow is not yours to decide whether you take it or not, especially if you're, you know, a customer trading on the screen. But the underlying theory of the discipline still holds true today. And that is to decide what you're going to do and stick to it and analyze what you're doing. If it's successful, do more of it, eliminate some of the baggage or the unsuccessful aspects. And if it's not successful, break it down and find and figure out why it's not successful to enhance it or possibly even change that plan. So I'm standing in Boeing and I'm trading the calendars and the verticals, and I'm there maybe 2 months, 3 months. I think it was, I think I went in there in June, and it was early September. And I have this remnant of a position on in Teledyne that I was waiting for it to move. And lo and behold, news comes out, and Teledyne, IBM, Honeywell were all proxies for the market. These were pre S&P 500 in tradable indexes. This is long pre ETFs. Okay. And when money came into the market, they went for bellwethers, which were those names I just mentioned, Superior Oil, a lot of companies that are gone, right? And Teledyne was one of them. So I see the stock start moving, was starting to rally, and I went, I'll be right back. And I ran into Teledyne to just try to, you know, leg out of this position with literally like 10 weeks of disciplined practice and disciplined training with these guys in this very austere crowd of Boeing. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, this is easy in here because this stuff's moving. You can leg it a lot easier. And I took that position off, made a lot of money in it. So I learned a lot in those 10 weeks of discipline. I will say I did my freaking homework every single night. Okay. I still do homework every night. I've started many businesses. I still have traders. I'm in and around the industry from a technology standpoint. And I still do my homework on what we're doing every single night. I mean, not so much on the weekends anymore. Back then I would, not all night, just for a while, just to be prepared for the next day. It is a trait worth learning, living it, and, you know, an ounce of prevention,
right,
worth a pound of cure, or, you know.
You know, Tony, that, I mean, that it's so important. people don't, traders really don't take that at hand about doing homework. They think that just coming up here, flipping on some switches, I got my monitors up here, let's see where the market's moving, let's go for it. You know, back when it was open outcry, we didn't have the monitors, we didn't have the screens. If we did, you'd have to wait in line before you could print up a chart of your markets.
Right.
But as you know, there was a lot of us doing homework on the trading floor as the market was moving, charting, physically charting, and working with others that had information and sharing the information. You know, nowadays you see a lot or you hear a lot of short-cutting, half-assing. And, you know, I tried to stress that point where, you know what, you got to do it. This is something very important. You got to do your homework. You got to know what the possibilities, what the opportunities might lay ahead. Look down the road, you know, to see what might happen. But it's very good that you brought that point out, how important it is.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, I had a coach in high school who would correct people often when they would say, practice makes perfect, okay? And he would say, no, that's not accurate. Perfect practice makes perfect. So just thinking you're doing your homework every night without actually having some tenets of practicing perfectly will be a waste of time. And what I learned from those guys in the bowling pit, what we've taught in our programs over the years is to how to practice more efficiently, more perfectly, and how to focus on concentrated aspects of study or preparation so that you get the most out of that. Right. And not waste your time. So yeah, it's an acquired, you have to train yourself how to practice and how to do homework properly.
Right. Now, Tony, old habits, new habits. Now, I still have old habits that haunt me every once in a while, but being in the business for over 30 years, I can catch it pretty quick. What would you suggest for a trader that probably traded, you know, let's say a year, maybe 2 years, had some bad habits, trying to turn those over, at least get rid of those and fill those in with good habits. What would you suggest to a trader to rid those old habits, to put those old habits to rest?
I mean, I know it's a buzzword these days. I cannot stress mentorship enough. I don't care who you are or how gifted you are, you cannot exchange IQ for experience. Now, you know, that's a broad statement and it needs some clarification. So what I'll say is that not all mentors are created equally. Obviously, you need a good communicator. You need someone who has experience. I have a guy that works for me that he's been with me for 20 years. And when we met, he said, I want to work for you. You've made millions. And my dad used to always say to me, you know, if you want to be the best batter on the team, you don't go and talk to a guy who's a great bowler. You seek out that batting champ or that guy who's hitting 300 consistently and hang with him and see what he does and ask him questions and observe what is making a difference in his approach. And I mean, you know, I've learned from the people that I work with and I try to teach them. So mentorship or mentoring is what is the big difference between success and non-success or success and failure with big trading shops and do-it-yourself, self-directed traders. Now, is that 100%? No. There are gifted people that can figure things out on their own, and they use surrogates for their mentorship. They maybe read more or watch more video or end up talking to some people. But for the most part, those individuals who listen to people who've done it before, who have success, and are imparting those pearls, have a much better chance at success. So it's mentorship. And it's as simple as this. You know, I want to, so we've gotten into the crypto space in the past year. And I, you know, I've started reading about Bitcoin right when it was made known in 09 or early 10. We had a guy who wrote for it in our research department. I love to read him. So I was reading everything he put out, and I thought it was interesting. And so after a couple of years of reading about it, or 15 months, I said, okay, that's cool. I know everything I need to know. Put it down, got busy with something else. And, you know, before I knew it, you know, 5+ years went by and I wasn't involved. I wanted to get involved last year. So I sought out people who had been doing it, started asking them questions and immersed myself. But it takes mentorship to get up that curve so people can redirect you in a very human sense. Okay. So that's, you can learn discipline. Now you can get somebody who claims to be a mentor that doesn't have a lot of good habits, and you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. I think with us being on the trading floor and us having that opportunity, same position, as there were some people that wanted to be a mentor, didn't really stack up. There was others that didn't want to be a mentor, but they had all the right information. So it was like a pick and choose. You know, when I was on the trading floor, I was a sponge, and I'd absorb as much information I could, and then I'd filter it out, use what I needed. And, you know, that's what I share with a lot of the listeners about being a sponge. There's a lot of educators out there, but take and choose what works for you. You don't have to use it right away. File it away. If there's decent information, a decent educator, file it away. And maybe later on down the road, you can pull it out of your file cabinet and use that. And use it. Now, we talk about goals. Now, my mentors, the ones that I really took a liking to, would quiz me and ask me, what's your goal for today? What's your goal for the week? I use that again with my listeners, with traders, people that I try to mentor. You know, have a set plan. Tony, how would you recommend traders set goals nowadays? Since you're a mentor for many, many traders.
Depending upon your purpose or desire for trading, is it for your absolute livelihood? Is it to enhance your income? Is it to increase your assets of an already reasonable nest egg? Is it for fun? Is it shoot the lights out alternative to going to Vegas? I mean, not everybody sits down in front of a machine to trade these days for the same reasons. And depending upon, I don't care what you say, it isn't all about, well, I just want to make the most I can, because that, you know, isn't necessarily a reasonable guide. So if it's your livelihood and you're counting on this to be your career, you would have a different approach to things than, well, I've got a nest egg and I want to enhance my returns through a bit of trading on a part-time basis, and your risk reward profile, if you will, is going to be different than that of grinding it out for your living or shooting the lights out for some fun. So that's where I would start, and saying, well, you know, how much do I need to make every day? You know, what is my intended target? And that's, you know, where I would start with that goal. Because so the market can give to everyone. there's enough in the market to give to everyone. Depending where you live and who you are, a six-figure annual income is a pretty admirable income.
Sure.
And particularly if you look at globally, okay? So if you start to add smart young men and women in India or in China or other parts of the world where incomes are considerably and drastically different than they are in the West, and particularly in the U.S., a $50,000, you know, $4,000 a month income in India, you live like a king. Okay. So the market can give to many. It's just that someone like yourself or myself who've been doing this for a long time may not find it interesting to sit in front of a machine all day for $4,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 a month. Okay. So different lifestyles, different goals, different objectives in terms of revenue generation or compensation achievement will dictate your style of trading, your discipline, how you approach approach trading. I worked in the early days with psychologists and therapists to understand different personality traits of the traders that I had, different aggressive and passive tendencies. So, you know, not everybody can trade options.
Right.
I can't sit and scalp futures. You know, we're all predisposed to different things. So setting your goals are really a factor of all those components, Eddie. And there isn't one size fits all. There's soul searching. There's an understanding of where you want to be. But the market can feed many, 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 many people when you consider simply Forex, U.S. or I'm sorry, equities, options, and futures globally. There's enough in the money river to feed a lot of people at very reasonable annual incomes.
Yeah, the thing is, you had to find the right market, something that fit your characteristics. You had to be in there for a bit. You had to know. It was almost like a marriage, you know, as you're sort of like the one market you were telling, what, Teledyne. You know, you sort of jumped in that pit. You liked it, and you're like, well, you know, I'm gonna stick around. I'm gonna give her a call again, maybe next weekend. We'll see what we can do. And it grew, and you know, it was good for you. And I mean, that's what we look for in trading, is something that's going to sort of pat us on the ass. You know, we'd like to say each and every trade, but we know that's not going to happen. And of course, you know, with a relationship, if some of us are married and some of us aren't, or dating or whatever, you've got the good along with the bad. And of course, I'm going to throw it in there and put in the ugly. It all goes hand in hand. Now, one of the things that you did was you kept building your strategy, building it. Now, some strategies I've had, some strategies other traders have had, they work, and sometimes they didn't. You know, I've heard you mention Forex options in other interviews. Now, how did you decide to pull the trigger?
How did I decide to pull the trigger on which strategies or on which asset classes?
Let's say the strategies. That's something, I mean, different markets, you know, a lot of times there's guys on the trading floor. They jump in one pit, all of a sudden they'd be zooming across the floor to another pit, And it's
Well, I'll just say that I had a really bad experience in FX. So I wouldn't my time in currencies, I traded currencies for 2 years when there was a G8 and there were still currencies. I traded dollar yen, Deutschmark, Frenchy, and a little bit of the Canadian.
Was this at the CME?
SIBO. SIBO traded large spot options for 2 years.
Okay.
But I had banking lines with all the major banks. I mean, it was a multi-million dollar operation because I lost multi-millions of dollars. And it was, I learned a lot. And, you know, I became comfortable with the QuoteTrek, which is the original mobile quote machine. And, you know, the reality of it is that I got burned because, you know, FX options traded and reacted differently than equity options. So that was a long time ago. And I understand it's a great marketplace to trade today, just the spot effect, you know, Forex spot. But, you know, I would always choose something that would move. You know, I liked to trade vol from both sides. And I had a lot of friends that just wanted something that wasn't going to move. And their deal was they wanted, you know, time to work for them and just sold premium. So, so that's, you know, how I chose my strategies were basically, I mean, at the time I always was looking for, reasonably low risk and, a meaningful, reward or a meaningful upside. So that's, you know, that's a review process that I do or would do over and over and over again, you know, because that there wasn't one strategy that I went to all the time. Although, you know, the butterfly was my favorite, and it was because it had defined risk parameters, risk reward parameters, had three legs and four components to trade. And it was very, very flexible, very universal. And you could kind of, quote, set it and forget it.
Right. I used to like that. Set it, forget it. Some of our traders turned into the broadcast and so forth. I would call it the phone clerk order. Where, you know, you initially put your trade in, but just as a phone clerk on the trading floor. And I paid my dues being a phone clerk, for First Chicago. And, you know, the big houses would call in. You know, we'd have Deutsche Bank and, RBC, Royal Bank of Canada. And they'd call in and they'd put a big order in. And, you know, you'd put the order in the pit, you'd write it up, timestamp it. And then you'd go and do, you know, you wouldn't worry about it. And, you know, if you can have that mentality and not worry about it, not stress over it, set it, forget it, you know, put it in there and let it work and let it work for you. So that's something that I share with a lot of our
traders,
you know.
Totally agree with that. Yeah.
Now, we talk about some of the basics here in trading. Always hearing that patience, management, discipline. Can we talk about discipline? You know, it's a buzzword in trading, and I'd like to see if you could take that buzz out of it. What is discipline in trading?
Well, great question, and I don't know if we have enough time to really cover the entirety of the answer, and I'm not sure I have the entirety of the answer at the tip of my tongue. But so, you know, first of all, you're spot on that it's a freaking buzzword, right? And discipline is something that I learned really early in life, okay? I was not a child of means. Grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, if you will, and started working very early as a child, doing various things to earn some spending money, most of which would go in the bank, save up for college. It's the only way I was going to go to college. But when I became a long distance runner in junior high, and then a few years later, a wrestler in high school, I really started to learn the various sides of discipline. In wrestling, the discipline would come in multiple factors, Eddie. Okay. The discipline of your diet, the discipline of your strength and endurance training, but then the discipline on the mat to not overreach, to not overextend, to not over maneuver, so that a more agile opponent would take advantage of your move. You know, I'm not someone who's versed in martial arts or Eastern, physical warfare, but that's what happens from what I understand, that somebody takes advantage of a move that's too sudden or too great. And the same thing happens then, you know, throughout other aspects of discipline, to guide yourself, to be mindful of your boundaries. And when it comes to trading, you know when you're over trading. Now, you don't know in the beginning, because if you did, then you wouldn't need to be talking about learning. I mean, you come to the table with that. But the aspect of discipline that I learned through, I overdid it. I ran too much. I dieted too much. It was a little bit maniacal. You have to dial it back. But I was someone who could go for very long periods of time in a disciplined sense, particularly in trading when vol was getting hammered. In the summer of 85, we didn't have VIX, but we kept track of OEX volatility at the time. Mm-hmm. And OEX volatility got down to 6%. It was unheard of.
Right.
And anybody who had any position that required any, being long volatility was getting crushed. I had massive long positions. But through gamma scalping and through, other ways to find back doors out, I mean, it was not a good time. The desk lost a lot of money for a while until that fall when vol came back. But the discipline meant I had a plan B and a plan C and a plan D.
Now,
not every strategy allows you to do that, though, right? Mm-hmm. So discipline means knowing your boundaries, you know, truly understanding the tools that you have at your disposal, knowing a second move. You know, I'm thankful for, you know, my sports experience, in being able to know when to put on the final sprint in a, you know, two and a half, 2 3/4 mile race, how to gauge my, endurance on the mat, things like that. You can see the correlations in life and then in trading.
Exactly. Tony, can I ask you two more questions?
Sure.
Okay. The one that I was saving for last, I want to talk about this 70 months, six-figure plus trading profits. For 70 months, six figures. What was this about?
Well, it started in the summer of, summer of 82. And we had a tremendous bull market run, okay? And the standing in the pit and trading was phenomenal. Now, being a market maker, there were months, there were days I made six figures. There were days that, it was written about during the crash, I made, millions in a day. But during that period, the trading I did, the market making I did, I was able to cobble together a string of $100,000 a month or more consistently. Actually, it probably started a little bit before that, maybe in the spring of 82.
Now, I mean, just trying to fathom that winning streak. I mean, it's better than Oral Hershiser with the. I mean, it's serious. I mean, this is like this is one of the hottest streaks I know of, and being in the business that long. I mean, it's fantastic, fantastic.
Well, you know, I was the most active trader on the floor at the time. I was maniacal at trading, and I was pretty disciplined. I didn't.
It worked.
I hardly took any vacation time. I actually, part of my strategy in the early, when I told you that story about Boeing, the other part of the concept was that once you hit your number, you know, then you could take the rest of the month off. So, you know, I set a number of, trying to make $2,000 a month. I had to pay like $500 for my seat lease, and then I split the difference with my partner, and so I could live on $750 a month. So I was literally cutting out sometimes in the middle of the month, and then my partner called me and said, why are you only trading for 2 weeks? I said, well, I hit my number, and I, you know, want to have some fun, and so on and so forth. And, you know, he talked me into staying. And the part that relates to, you know, the your targets and the discipline and you know, being able to do 100,000 a month or more was I didn't leave when I hit my targets. I would stay and trade, and I rarely. My vacation, I had a place in Arizona, and I would head out on the bell on Thursday. I'd take 3-day weekends and come back late on Sunday night. So I didn't really vacation, but it was good. I mean, that was the heyday of being on the floor. Mm-hmm. I had figured out stuff that only a few people had figured out. And I was a workaholic.
Now, Tony, I just want to thank you for being with us here today. And it was great sitting down and sort of like a little coffee on each side, drinking coffee, just talking as friends.
And absolutely.
I appreciate that deep down. And very nice to have you here. Before you go, Tony, where can people find you online?
Well, I would say that if they want to email me, they can email me at info@matrixx.com. That's MATRIXEX, matrixx.com. Or I'm on LinkedIn. And I think if you go to our website, Matrix Execution, there's a spot to reach me. I try to respond to everything that people send me. Predominantly younger traders do. I had a guy that wanted me to try a new food product that he was creating because he had heard that I was in the restaurant business in another, you know, era many, many years ago.
So was I. I tell you, we're running the same track here, Tony.
Yeah, we're twin brothers from different mothers, Eddie.
Yeah, I think so. But it's cool. It's cool. It's all cool.
So those are the main places, but definitely welcome that. We care about, you know, options traders, people who want to get in the options business. Obviously, traders of all kinds, futures and options and equities. But always, you know, I'm mentoring, you know, young people right now. I get people involved in the Evan Scholars Program or Caddy to help to get them into the Evan Scholars Program. So I think you can't do enough to give back. Right. And that's just a thing that you need to do. So happy to respond. I appreciate that.
Tony, you're a good man. What goes around comes around, my friend.
Knock on wood. I hope you're right, Eddie.
All right. You know what? Let me just say before you go, I had more questions to ask. Hopefully we can get you back here again down the road. And it was a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
At your pleasure. I will do that. Absolutely, Eddie. Great. And I hope to see you maybe for a beer one night.
Beautiful. All right. Okay. On me. Thanks a lot.
Great.
Take care, Tony. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, Dan. One of the things that stuck out was our conversation around discipline. Now, discipline, my goodness. A lot of us forget about that special word that is such a friend to successful trading. Now, I tried to have Tony take that buzz out of the word. One of the things that he really hammered on was that discipline was a skill that can be learned. Now, so many times you think of it as a restriction. I know, and I salute you, you're a Marine.
Yep.
Now, do you got any good stories about learning discipline? Nah. Of course you do. What's one of the top stories, being a Marine, that you actually said, you know what, discipline is number one priority here?
So, 100%. I didn't know it was discipline at the time. But hearing all that, it kind of took me back to my time in the Marine Corps. I always go back to boot camp. That's really where that whole idea of discipline gets kind of drilled in your head. Literally and figuratively. And I was guide of my platoon, so I was kind of in charge of my platoon, and we had what's called a guide on. It was basically a long flagpole. And I got in a little bit of trouble. I did something I probably wasn't supposed to do. And my drill instructors decided to take it out on me, and I had to sit there holding this flagpole directly out. It was kind of a sort of a way of form of saluting with the guide on. And I cheated and I tried to hide it, and I was trying to hook my elbow on my pants and in my belt, and I walked away with a cut and wear and just a total rug burn almost on my elbow that lasted for close to 2 months. And that's when I finally realized, I was like, you know what, you just have to do what you're supposed to do, because trying to skate around and trying to break the rules and, you know, shortcut, it ends up hurting.
Oh, yeah. Shortcut, half-assing it. You're only hurting yourself.
Exactly. And that's when I finally learned it. I just, you know what, if I do what I'm supposed to do, yeah, it's going to hurt for a short time, but the end result is going to be a lot greater, where if I'm shortcutting and if I'm not having discipline, that scab is going to last so much longer than that little short-time hurt.
You know, it sort of circles around to the word experience, and that's what Tony was talking about. I believe his quote was, you can't exchange IQ for experience. Now, well, that's self-teaching itself, all right? Mm-hmm. You need the experience. You need to be repetitive and do the same process over. Look at your options and look at the possibilities. You know, that's why it's really important to have a mentor to give you a direction. You know, that's why we have all the things we do, video content. You know, we share experiences, mm-hmm. and we help the trader grow.
Yeah, exactly. No one does this alone. You know, we may, you know, fabricate and form our own plans and our own ideas, but at the end of the day, we don't do this alone. There's always been someone there above us helping us, someone guiding us, someone just there to be, even if mentors don't always have to be smarter than us, they're there to kind of help us keep on track. And so I think it's really important to always have a mentor. And I think it's great to show that Tony, you know, stressed that was really one of his main keys to success in this industry. We got to have that.
Right. Another thing Tony was talking about was the monetary goals. Now, I mentioned before the interview, you know, this is something we try to avoid, is watching the monetary mm-hmm. effects of our trading. He related it more to defining the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. We say, don't do that. Don't look at the money.
Totally. But what I think is important to kind of think about, we do have to, because if this is going to be our profession, if this is going to be our ultimate living, we got to have an idea of just what it takes each day to scrape by, so to speak. So I know guys that would do it that I used to trade with, and they'd say, look, I need $70 a day to cover my expenses. So if I can make 70 in a day, that's a good day.
and not capping what can ultimately be there. So that's kind of how I look at it when there is that notion or thought of putting a monetary goal on it. Just what do I need to make it into the next day? Because you're a pick guy. You know how it was. I mean, our expenses on the floor were – that was a necessity to make that kind of money.
You know, on the trading floor, you'd always want to look at the money. But the thing is, you'd never talk about it. You talk to somebody, I had a good day today. I made, 72 ticks.
Yeah.
You would never use the monetary term.
No, not at all. But, I mean, I know my expenses every month that – back in my mind, I had goals and I had numbers that I needed to meet. Otherwise, I wasn't coming down there for another month.
Now, you mentioned goals, objectives. What is your mission? What do you want out of trading? Now, that's going to guide your goals. If you want to make a career out of it, you have to have a very different goal than someone doing it for enhanced returns. And once again, it sort of brings us back to money.
Totally.
Another thing that I talked with Tony was he worked on the psychological and tactical parts of trading. And I'll say it again, and I'll say it again, I'll keep saying it. The psychological aspect of trading is my number one priority.
100%. I think you nailed it in there pretty good. You said so many people come in and just want to flip on the screens and go.
Right.
There's so much more work outside of that.
And you know what? And one of the highlights in the conversation was he did his homework. Every night he'd get up. And the thing was, too, I was listening to him, and I'm sort of cringing, like, every night I got to do homework. Come on, I want to trade. But that's what made him such a good trader for such a long time.
Couldn't agree more.
Do your homework every night and make sure that your mindset is clear. We try to cover both aspects at Limit Up. So lots more podcasts here at Limit Up. Educate yourself. Dan, I just want to say thank you very much for joining me today and our listeners. All right, traders, as always, thank you for spending time with us. And if you enjoyed this interview, please feel free to leave us a rating or review. It helps us reach new traders. Thanks for spending time with us. We'll see you next week. Dan, we'll have you back on very soon.
Thanks, Eddie. It's always a pleasure to be here.
All right. Take care.
Editing and post-production of this episode was done by Dante32.
Futures and Forex trading contains substantial risk and is not for every investor. An investor could potentially lose all or more than their initial investment. Risk capital is money that can be lost without jeopardizing one's financial security or lifestyle. Only risk capital should be used for trading, and only those with sufficient risk capital should consider trading. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results.